It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.rir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And I think in terms of Virginia, it's particularly important for us to think about the impacts of sequestration, particularly with regard to jobs, because, you know, Virginia is very dependent on federal spending of all types. For example, the federal government spends more per capita in Virginia. We rank first in the country in per capita defense spending and second in the country in per capita federal spending overall, second only to Alaska.
Michael Cassidy, president of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, explains the toll being taken by the sequester's automatic across-the-board cuts to federal programs and why the sequester isn't even necessary anymore. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll find out about a record-setting penalty for debt collection violations. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 210, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.rir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The Federal Trade Commission, or FTC's, record-setting settlement with Expert Global Solutions and its subsidiaries should send a message to the debt collection industry. You may know them as NCO Financial Systems, ALW Sourcing, Transworld Systems, or North Shore Agency. It's a big group of companies with more than 32,000 employees operating in the U.S., Canada, Barbados, India, the Philippines, and Panama. According to the FTC's complaint, they called consumers multiple times in the same day, often for weeks on end and early in the morning or late at night, times the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or FDCPA, expressly declares off limits. In addition, they called people at work even when they knew employers didn't allow those calls. And the calls kept coming, even after people asked them to stop and they promised to cut it out. They left phone messages that disclosed the existence of a person's debt to a third party in violation of the FDCPA. And even when consumers explained they didn't owe the debt, they wouldn't take no for an answer. They continued their collection efforts without verifying the accuracy of the disputed information. Under the terms of the settlement, Expert Global Solutions, NCO, and other subsidiaries are under a legal obligation to change their tactics. In addition to a record-setting $3.2 million civil penalty, they agreed to cut out the harassment, including the incessant calls. Stop calling a person's workplace if it's clearly inconvenient or not allowed by the employer. And, except for limited circumstances allowed by law, stop all communications if a person has requested no further contact or if they have refused to pay the debt. The settlement also restricts the situations when they can leave voicemails that disclose the name of an alleged debtor and that he or she owes money. When people dispute that they owe the debt or how much they owe, the collectors have two choices: close the account or suspend collections until they have conducted a reasonable investigation and verified that their information about the debt is accurate and complete. To encourage compliance, for the next year, the collectors must record at least 75% of their debt collection calls and keep the recordings for at least 90 days. The message to others in the industry is simple. Honor the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, and we are talking with Michael Cassidy, who is the president of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. And we are going to be talking today about the federal budget sequestration and its impact nationally as well as in Virginia. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Marty. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here. And a good place to start, it seems to me, is at the beginning. What exactly is sequestration?
So sequestration is a set of across-the-board cuts to federal spending that were enacted as part of the Budget Control Act a couple of years ago, which was one of the provisions to try to avoid a default of the U.S. government in part of the budget showdowns we've had over the last few years. And so in order to provide an incentive for Congress to put together a realistic, holistic package of long-term federal budget deficit reduction, a sort of sword of Damocles was hung over the head of Congress that said, if you can't come up with a deal, we're going to have these really harsh across-the-board cuts in the form of sequestration that would start in 2013. And unfortunately, Congress was not able to reach kind of a grand bargain for long-term deficit reduction. And so these very draconian across-the-board cuts are starting to come into play now that we're in 2013.
Now, I always thought the classic definition of sequestration is a situation where Congress has actually appropriated money and it's held by the executive and the executive holds back some of it and not spend it. That's not exactly what's going on here. Am I correct about that?
Exactly. So this is sort of a different form of how funds are sequestered. And so instead what you're having is within an enacted budget, agencies are having to go through and make these across-the-board cuts. They're evenly distributed between defense and non-defense domestic discretionary spending, and there's limited discretion that agencies have in terms of how to implement them. So it's a sort of a slightly different concept than what other folks may have heard of funds being sequestered, for example.
Now, you used the phrase domestic discretionary spending. I would gather from that some federal spending is not being sequestered and some is. So could you tell us briefly what is not being sequestered and what is, in fact, subject to these across-the-board cuts?
Sure. So most of the spending in the federal budget is subject to sequestration in some way, shape, or form. But there are some programs, particularly those serving low-income Americans and the most vulnerable, that have been protected from sequestration. The rest, however, are subject to these across-the-board cuts. And so you've got this series of reductions that the Defense Department has to meet and other national security agencies have to meet in terms of defense spending. And then similarly, for all the other agencies in government, they have some similar targets that have to be met for the non-defense discretionary side of the budget.
So I gather things like Social Security and Medicare, those are not subject to the sequestration?
Social Security is not. Medicare, nothing will be cut from beneficiaries, but there is an across-the-board reduction in Medicare payment rates to providers who provide the services to Medicare beneficiaries, and it's about 2% that they get cut in terms of their reimbursements for the services they provided.
So earlier you mentioned that this was set up as a sword of Damocles hanging over Congress's head to force a grand bargain, and this was something that was not supposed to happen, and yet it did. So how did this happen? Why did this happen?
So Congress was unable to reach an agreement on a set of budget reduction policy changes that would be needed to hit the targets that were set in the Budget Control Act. Because essentially, there would need to be a set of both spending reductions and revenue increases in order to meet those targets for stabilizing the federal debt over the long term. One of the key goals was to stabilize the federal debt as a percentage of our gross domestic product. And that would be sort of a commonly held goal in terms of what's a realistic approach we should be taking. Basically, the federal debt shouldn't be growing any faster than the economy is. And so in order to achieve that kind of stabilization of the federal debt, you would need to have both a combination of spending reductions as well as revenue increases. Congress was not able to agree on what those would be, what the particular package would be, both the size and the shape and the timing of that. And so instead, we're left with this default approach, which is very ham-handed because it's across the board in nature. It's very front-loaded. We're having very significant reductions in federal spending right now in 2013, even though the economy remains weak and the recovery, although underway, is still not robust. Whereas a smarter set of policies would have, for example, backloaded some significant deficit reduction for some later years to the point where the economy could handle those reductions better than now.
And I gather from your answer that the sequestration is not a one-year event. This is a multi-year event stretching considerably into the future. How far into the future is this projected to go unless changes are made?
Right. So it's going to be over the next several years. Will be a series of reductions in order to meet the targets that were set in the Budget Control Act. So there's a couple of different ways that that can be achieved. This year, because it's happening in the middle of the year, it's done by these across-the-board reductions in funding levels in different programs. And so as a result, agencies are doing things like furloughing employees, and they're not renewing contracts, and they're making other adjustments to their annual budget as they go, if you will. Going forward, however, a slightly different approach could be taken that would have the same net effect. So, for example, going forward, the Congress may just simply adjust downward the spending allocations that they give to the various appropriations committees to build the budget next year. That will take into effect the reductions that need to happen because of sequestration in order to meet the enacted targets in the Budget Control Act. And so there's a couple of different ways that it might come together over the next several years, but the point is that there's still going to be a series of very significant reductions in federal spending that are required by law over the next several years, unless Congress does something different.
So what is the effect right now, both federally as well as right here in Virginia?
So I think one important way to look at it is to think about it in terms of jobs and the impact on the economy, because I think that is really the central threat in many ways to what sequestration poses. Because what is being done is a series of reductions in spending through things like furloughing employees, not renewing contracts, reducing payment rates, all of that then cascades through the economy and is going to have a reduction in the economic activity and economic growth of the economy. So, for example, you know, the Congressional Budget Office recently estimated a reduction in the gross domestic product of about 0.7% overall. So slightly less than one percentage point reduction in what we would have as our GDP if we hadn't enacted this set of policies. And I think in terms of Virginia, it's particularly important for us to think about the impacts of sequestration, particularly with regard to jobs, because, you know, Virginia is very dependent on federal spending of all types. For example, the federal government spends more per capita in Virginia. We rank first in the country in per capita defense spending and second in the country in per capita federal spending overall, second only to Alaska. Most of this spending is concentrated in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. And just as an example, federal spending per capita was about $17,000 in Virginia in recent years, and the national average is only $8,800 per capita. So we're significantly higher than the rest of the country in terms of federal spending. You know, when you look at Virginia's labor market, more than 1 in 10 Virginians are employed by the federal government in 2010, for example. And that compares to less than 1 in 25 for the rest of the country as a whole. So we as a state are very dependent on federal spending, particularly defense, but also non-defense, homeland security, other types of spending. So as a result, this set of across-the-board cuts that are going into play with sequestration are going to have an outsized impact on Virginia. Recent estimates by George Mason University Center for Regional Economics estimate that Virginia's gross state product will be reduced by about $15 billion and that labor income, you know, personal earnings in our state, will be reduced by almost $8 billion. In both those areas, slightly over half of the projected reduction is due to Defense Department cuts, and while the other part is due to these non-Defense Department cuts. So in Virginia, Professor Fuller at George Mason now estimates that we'll see direct and indirect and induced job losses from sequestration of about 154,000 jobs. And that is about almost 10% of all the job losses due to sequestration for the country as a whole. So even though we have 50 states, Virginia is getting about 10% of the cuts, job losses, because of this highly dependent economy that we have here in our state on federal spending.
So Virginia certainly is taking a bigger hit from sequestration than any other state in the union by far. What does the future hold? I mean, Congress is right now in July working on the federal budget that's supposed to start on October 1, although they never seem to actually have a budget in place by October 1 and haven't for years. And I gather that the House and the Senate are going in almost completely opposite directions on what to do in the future. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, so there remains a lack of consensus in the Congress about how to proceed on our federal budget deficit challenges. For example, as you mentioned, the approach taken by the Senate differs quite dramatically from the approach taken by the House in terms of how they want to handle the federal budget. On top of that, our next fire drill facing us will be in the debt ceiling, which is we're going to hit the debt ceiling come the fall. And so there's going to be a significant amount of gamesmanship around trying to extract the most that they can out of that crisis that we'll be facing. In terms of a deal to lift the debt ceiling might include what? There's going to be pressure by a number of lawmakers to say, let's turn off sequestration and let's replace it with a set of more appropriate budget reduction approaches and strategies going forward. Others will say that they want to keep sequestration in place and they want to go deeper, or they want to shift those cuts to better shield defense spending, for example, and cut deeper from discretionary spending on the domestic side of the federal budget. And so we are likely to continue to have an ongoing debate around this. In the meantime, a lot of stuff has already fallen into place. I mean, we have had a series of reductions in federal spending because of the Budget Control Act, because of reductions in appropriations, because of the fiscal cliff deal that was struck towards the end of last year, that together have reduced the projections for the federal deficit both this year and in the future quite significantly. On top of that, as part of the fiscal cliff deal, there was also the agreement on the Bush tax cuts that brought in about $600 billion of new revenue. And so there's also pressure to say, you know what, we've tackled these deficit problems and we've brought in some new revenue, and so we need to just move on and start dealing with other issues on the agenda for our country. And so I think that the chances of coming together on a sort of balanced package or sort of a grand bargain are very tricky. because of these ongoing differences of views about what is the problem and how to deal with it, and the fact that we're going to be facing, you know, yet another debt ceiling drill.
Well, now, some analysts have made the argument that the sequestration no longer is necessary and that basically it's time to hit the reset button and start all over and to make more targeted cuts and to, in fact, make some investments that would actually help the economy. What's the evidence behind that view?
So one is the significant reductions in both the current year and future year deficit projections. The economy has been slowly recovering. It's not where it needs to be, and there's a lot of folks in this country and in our state who are still struggling from the impacts of the recession, for sure. But we have seen many months of private sector job growth. We have seen the upticks in consumer spending and the consequential top-line impacts on the economy, as well as beginning to see some reductions in the demand for safety net programs and things like that. That had come with the recession. And so what we're left with, though, still is this big jobs challenge, and that's really the fundamental challenge. It's not really – their argument is it's not a federal budget deficit challenge. It's a job problem. And to the extent we can solve the job problem, we can also take care of our budget problems, because when people are back to work, they're earning income and they're paying taxes and they don't need as much in terms of social services and things. I think a lot of that is also borne out by the situation we see here in our own state. You know, we've seen recent dips in Virginia's unemployment rate and increases in our own state's revenues. And they've got some people thinking that we're out of the woods in terms of the recession. But most areas in Virginia still have far fewer jobs than the start of the recession 5 years ago. Three out of four of Virginia's cities and counties have fewer jobs today than in the first quarter of 2008. And so there's a strong argument to be made that we need to focus on the real challenge in front of us, which is jobs and creating jobs in order to get folks back to work. And that's going to help not only those workers and those families and those communities, but also help the federal deficit and budget challenges long term.
Now, I know some critics would say that creating jobs means more federal spending, more state spending, resulting in even increasing debt. How would you respond to that criticism?
That's why there has been such a strong argument that we need sort of a balanced package that deals with some of these long-term challenges we have, because we certainly have long-term federal budget and debt problems in this country, but that in the short term, we need more investment in things like job training and job programs and helping people find work and getting retrained to be ready for the jobs that are growing. So it's kind of like a barbell approach where you need sort of have front-loaded stimulus to the economy around jobs and increasing that demand, as well as a set of more long-term reductions in federal spending, in federal debt, in order to stabilize the debt long term, and that combination of short-term investments in the right things coupled with agreements on a long-term approach to fixing our problems together can put us on the right path.
And finally, where can people go to learn more information about sequestration and its impact on the federal budget, on Virginia, and what some of the alternatives to sequestration would be?
Sure. So we have some information, particularly around how issues are affecting Virginia's state budget, on our website, www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org. But there's also some very useful information by national efforts that are tracking this more nationally. One is an effort called the Half in 10 campaign, which is looking at reducing poverty in our country and has done a lot of good work on the impacts of sequestration. That is halfin10.org, as well as the Coalition on Human Needs, which has a particular focus on how things are affecting families and social services. And they have good sets of information available on their website. And information on the Coalition on Human Needs can be found at their website, www.chn.org.
Okay, thank you very much. We have been talking with Michael Cassidy. He is the president of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, and we have been talking about the federal budget, sequestration, and its impact both nationally and in Virginia, and what the alternatives to sequestration could and probably should be in the future. Thank you so much for being on the show, Michael.
My pleasure, Marty. Thank you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegebright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The current debate about immigration reform directly affects farm workers, both documented and undocumented. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Christian Quiroz, director of the Virginia Farm Workers Program, describes the lives of farm workers in Virginia and the laws which protect and sometimes fail to protect them. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegebright.